Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at SchoolSucksShow. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username SchoolSucksPodcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Know my way, know my star. Marina Messiah. No one fears who we are.
Marina Vempaka.
Always near, always far.
En Sierra Cansada.
I know my way, know my star.
If I were, I said to myself at many points in my life, to construct some kind of purpose, right? Shooting at something. This is what I want to achieve. This is what I want to realize with my existence. If I miss, what does that say? Who am I?
Oh, yeah.
What am
that's a very schooled fear of failure.
So the fear,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So even though you're working with like a special kind of person,
yeah.
Right? This fear must still be present.
Yeah, and the reframe I'll often take to them is, look, you'll still be in a better place having shot for that than if you didn't at all, right? So the way I like to imagine the system that I've developed, it really has like, it's got three big components to it, and you know, one of the ones that we can talk about is the ambition mapping component, which itself breaks into three components. Is imagine that there is some target off somewhere, like you're standing on the top of a mountain, and there's a target somewhere on the horizon, right? It's say a 4-foot by 4-foot target. There isn't really some platonic target out there in the reality of people's lives. That is one thing I remind them of, is there isn't like some platonic ideal of what you should do. The reality is, if you find work that you're effective at, and if you find work that you can see yourself growing through, this is something that Nathaniel Brandon brings up, this is something that some of the Jungian psychologists bring up, this is something that Jordan Peterson has brought up on numerous occasions, that people don't feel fulfilled by achieving things, they feel fulfilled by experiencing growth towards the achievement of meaningful goals.
And that, I think, is really, really difficult for the average person to sort of wrap their mind around and actually understand that.
Right. I mean, it's hard for the average person in particular, but if you're talking to an ambitious person who has stayed on that kind of ambitious path for a long time, they will identify with this.
Right.
So it's often like you get into college and this was the ideal that you were supposed to achieve for like 12 years straight, and then it's like, this is it?
Right, because you've kind of made it to your target, but you never look beyond it.
And you don't know why the target's there, right? So just imagine that you're standing on this mountaintop and there's this horizon. There's something out there that you can hit. Now, getting closer to that is better than just wandering through those woods. And having some kind of way of landing closer to that is better than just standing on top of the mountaintop.
Shaka Khan, everybody. It's Brett. Welcome back to the show. Today is Thursday, April 26th, and this is part two of our discussion with Zach Slayback. Today we're going to get into Zach's ambition mapping process in great detail, but remember to check the show notes to get a direct link to Zach's resources on this topic. One correction from the last show. For those of you who wanted to know more about Andrew's podcast, the address I gave in the last show was patg.com. It should have been patgpodcast.com. My apologies to author Pat Gaudet for increasing your bounce rate. Sorry about that, Pat. And I'll give your book a free plug here, How to Survive Your Husband's Midlife Crisis. I haven't actually read it, but I assume that it covers everything from what to do when you find a Corvette in the garage to helping him make a responsible decision about what to get pierced. Pat Gaudet surely has all the answers, ladies, and you can pick up your copy at patg.com. So I wanted to talk to you guys about a couple of travel things I have coming up this year. I just confirmed both of them over the course of the last week. Before we get to that, we are 2 weeks away from Renegade University and School Sucks Project present a weekend with Thaddeus Russell. I'm getting my plane tickets today, even though I'd really rather rent a car and drive there. But if you want to go and there are tickets left, the time to decide is now. It is May 11th through the 13th in New Orleans, Louisiana. You can purchase tickets at ThaddeusRussell.com. The New Orleans event is right on the front page. On Saturday, we're going to be talking about race, the history of an idea, for an entire day, I'm sure, with many tangents. And on Sunday, we'll be digging deep into Thad's new book, Blood and Freedom, talking about American foreign policy and the impact of American culture on the world. As a huge fan of World War II history and Nazi stuff in a healthy way, I'm really excited about that day. In that afternoon, we're also going to be recording a joint Unregistered and School Sucks podcast with participants. Camille Foster is going to be joining us, I think, both days. Michael Malice, unconfirmed at the time of this recording. I had a great conversation with a friend and listener, Joe Motard, from the Detroit area yesterday, and we set everything up for my appearance at the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, the 6th Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, happening on June 21st through the 25th. I'm going to be speaking that Saturday night, and I told him, because he's been such an enthusiastic supporter of the show, he could pick the topic for my speech. So I look forward to hearing what he comes up with. And also, this is fantastic news. Tom Woods called me over the weekend and invited me to be a speaker on the Contra Cruise. If you don't know anything about this, Tom Woods has another podcast called Contra Krugman that he does with the economist Bob Murphy. That show has quite a following, and every year they do a cruise for their listeners, and I'm going to be one of the speakers on that cruise. It is, I believe, the last week in October, but you can go to contracruise.com if you want more information about that. I am very excited about that, and I really, really appreciate the invitation. So this is part two with Zach. Remember to check out part one. And if you're like a super fan, there is also a bonus show with about 16 minutes of outtakes from our conversation. Plus, I tacked on a 20-minute talk from Andrew's show about self-esteem all the way back in 2014, which I thought was an interesting addendum. And of course, you can get access by going to schoolsucksproject.com/AV and signing up to support us, or by going to patreon.com/schoolsucks. And you're saying, Brett, I don't have time for your bonus content. Alex Jones posts 65 videos a day. You protest as you fire a gun into the air. And I say, look, sir, you know, I don't even know if we're right for you. You're not really our target demographic. But there are plenty of you who I know love this show. And I'm really, really careful about what I choose to put up as bonus content. I didn't always used to be so careful. You know, I used to throw anything in there. That is not the way we do it anymore. And I'm actually putting a lot of planning into a patron or supporter-only show that will be launching in May, and it won't just be me. I will have teams of some of your favorite people co-hosting that show with me, and more details are coming soon. But if you like what we do, if you like the stuff we give away absolutely for free, and you like the fact that we don't have a bunch of shitty ads on this show, you know those other shows that you listen to with their shitty ads? We don't have those. That's because this show's made possible by you. So schoolsucksproject.com/AV or patreon.com/schoolsucks. Thank you so much to all of you who do support this show every month. It created a lot of cool opportunities for me over the last year, and those opportunities are leading to new opportunities. And I'm determined to see that continue. Here's the second part of the discussion between me, Andrew, and Zach. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again next week.
So how can you set an effective goal if you don't know what it should be?
Let's solve that problem.
Okay.
So before we get into solving this problem,
okay,
I want to talk about some of the work that Andrew and I have been doing, and this kind of explains why I wanted to bring him into this conversation.
Okay.
Huh, Andrew, how would you describe our relationship as far as like this transformation? We've been recording some bonus content for both of our websites on personal development. You know, part of it's been fitness related, part of it's been finance related, but the biggest part of it, the glue, is around productivity. Mm-hmm. Also, I think understanding the difference, the very, very important difference that I did not understand for a long time between being busy and being productive.
Yep.
So we're trying to actually be productive. And right. I've done like getting things done and optimizing Evernote for the better part of 5 years, but I'm still unsatisfied.
Yeah, the book I would recommend in this space, I have a copy of Getting Things Done. I will admit I have not read it yet. Mm-hmm. Is Organize Tomorrow Today.
Yes.
There's a point in Organize Tomorrow Today that I think is fantastic, which is that the most successful people don't get everything done. They don't get the most things done. They get the most important things done.
Mm-hmm.
So the phrase I use is not even productive, because I think productivity does have this kind of like...
It's prioritizing.
Yeah, I like the phrase effective. I'm a very effective person.
Mm-hmm.
So think about, what do I need to do in order to achieve a certain outcome? Well, an effective person will do the things in order to achieve that outcome. Mm-hmm. They won't do everything. They will do what is required, the subtasks that are required to achieve that outcome.
So let me just kind of give the background from my perspective of who Brett is to Andrew.
Okay.
So everyone listening knows Brett from the show. They know him as this eloquent, well-put-together guy. I just know him as my funny friend who comes and sits on my show sometimes. And then over time, I started listening to little bits and bits of his show, and it comes in waves. I'll listen to a lot, then I'll listen to none for months. And that's not a commentary on the content or your podcast or anything. That's just who you are to me. But on the grand scheme of things, if we step back, you're one of the most important people in my life. Like, you've helped me more than any other individual I can think of. And I'm eternally grateful for that. But I've kind of looked at what you excel at, and I've tried to model whatever I'm doing after that and take the best parts of that and really try to focus on them. And that's this journey I've been going down.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a very important person to me. And I'll tell you, if you were a woman,
believe me, I've thought about it. I pictured it. Say no more.
You're a very strong motivating factor for me. And just a good friend, and I am somebody who likes to have close friends around. I like to share experiences, and I don't like to really withhold anything. And yeah, you've helped me a ton in a lot of different areas.
I appreciate you saying that.
No, I appreciate you.
You've helped me a ton too. My goodness, absolutely. We've been holding each other accountable on a variety of different things, because I'm well aware of what my weaknesses are. You know, the blind spots that I've had in life, and you know, I put them to Andrew primarily as if like, okay, you know, I have like an unresourceful part of me that is kind of approaching the situation in a not so helpful and not so healthy way. And in my head, there's a resourceful part of me. So help me amplify that part, mm-hmm. because that's all you have. You don't mm-hmm. have my emotions. You don't have my ego. You know me, like maybe not like
hold
I know
me accountable.
Yeah, exactly. Same. So we've been, you know, doing that for each other. I mean, we've been friends for years, but we've been doing that for each other, I think, more directly over the course of the last year. And, you know, when you mentioned goals to me as a topic, I said, well, gosh, this is something we've devoted so much, you know, private and like bonus content conversation to recently. Yeah. It would be good if the three of us could sit down and kind of mastermind right. on this a little bit.
I don't think anybody can just jump in headfirst into this, because, for example, I came to you a few years ago and talked to you about this, too. And you recommended GTD, Getting Things Done, to me.
Yeah, that was 2014.
Yeah. I went out and I bought the audiobook Getting Things Done. It's just mentally, I wasn't actually ready to commit to it or even...
Well, this kind of even goes back to what we were saying earlier about using exterior forces to actually motivate yourself.
Right.
You need to have a reason to do the things that you...
Well, I could have listed a million reasons as to why I should be doing this and why I should be implementing a system and getting control of this mess of my life. But for whatever reason, something in my head, my mental growth, whatever it might have been, just wasn't there.
Right.
And it took years until I finally was ready to actually jump in.
Well, you know,
and start putting an honest effort.
One of the
it.
Things that's consistently referenced in like the personal development and self-help space around the importance of goals is this this gorilla study you've probably heard about, right? Where it's to illustrate the importance of focus on some sort of outcome or some specific filter for taking in information. And it's this old study. I forget who did it and where it was exactly done, but the broad strokes of the study are they took a class of students and they had them watch a video of people passing a basketball back and forth. And they told them, count how many times the basketball has been passed back and forth.
I think this was Harvard, yeah.
And then they stopped. When they were done, they asked the students, how many of you saw the gorilla in the middle of the room? And most of them were like, what? What gorilla? And then they went back and watched it again. And there in the middle of the video is a 6 foot tall man in a gorilla suit that walks out onto the court and hits his chest and walks away.
Right.
In the middle of the video. And no one noticed it until they were told about it.
He's right? In the frame for probably 8 to 10 seconds.
Yeah, it's not like he's hidden there.
No.
He walks right into the frame. And the point being that's like, if you're looking for something, you will see, you're more likely to see it than if you're not, right? If you're looking for a specific outcome or a specific result that you want to use the getting things done system, for example, to improve your life in, versus just, I want to be more productive, you're going right. to get more out of
and
it.
And that's exactly what my problem was. Whether it's getting things done or any other kind of improvement process, in the past, it was always, I just want to be better. And that was that. I didn't have a specific goal set out for me. I just wanted to improve. And, you know, now I don't have a clearly laid out path. I don't have, you know, a structure of next actions that lead to a definitive goal, but at least I have some form of that that's coming to fruition and beginning to exist,
right.
Which I never had before, which is why no system, no matter how great it might have been, would have worked. And I think that caused me to write off a lot of systems or ideas and things that worked for other people. I, for some reason, felt that I was above it.
Right. No, I mean, I'll tell you, for years I avoided the personal development stuff, which is weird considering that that's where a lot of my writing now falls.
I find it incredibly interesting now, but 2 years ago, no.
Yeah, I was like, I don't need this stuff. You know, I don't need this
sure.
self-help stuff.
Right, right. Right.
I think there are a couple things that really contributed for me, one of which was leaving school and trying to create a little bit more structure when I was working at Praxis. But then after I left Praxis, I actually did not have a very clear plan of what I wanted to do.
Really?
I'd actually interviewed for a job at a prominent venture capital fund, and because of some internal things with the managers at the fund, that didn't end up working out. So I had a couple weeks and months where I was like, well, yeah, I'm going to do some consulting with people I know. I'm going to do a lot of writing. I had some people come to me to do one-on-one coaching with them. And I was able to apply a lot of this to create the structure that I needed in my own life.
Right.
Having some sort of outcome in mind when you're actually going through this material is a lot better than just saying, like, I want to be better. It's like, I want to be in better shape. I want to earn more money. Like, that's not helpful. Like, you need to have a specific outcome. I was talking to a girl the other day who I sat down with her and turned into like an impromptu career coaching session, mm-hmm. which I didn't intend for it to be. But I have a friend who tells me, Zach, when you talk to people like just one-on-one, it sounds like a TED talk. And it was supposed to be an insult, and I considered it an insult. But mm-hmm. I sat down with this girl and we were talking, and she said, you know, yeah, I'm not particularly happy in my job, but I'm learning a lot and I'll quit when I know I'm not learning anything. It's like, well, how do you know you'll get to the point where you're not learning as much, or when the opportunity cost of staying there is higher than leaving?
Right.
And right. she didn't have any specific outcome in mind, right? So, but you can't just like randomly set a goal in the ether. I think having a randomly set goal in the ether is better than having none at all. But you want to have it that the things that you're achieving for specific reasons, right?
Okay, so there's a few connections that we can make here. First of all, I totally agree with what Andrew was saying, where, you know, I mean, my first attempts at productivity were about presence, mm-hmm. right? Like, I was realizing that the lack of clarity about what I was doing, or, you know, organizational mismanagement, as I tried to transition from having a very structured life of being a teacher mm-hmm. to having a less structured life of being a contractor working for a company, to an even less structured life of running a small tutoring business, to an even less structured life of whatever this school sucks thing even is.
Right, right.
It's completely amorphous. You know, when I really try, I mean, I was not ready to make the transition away from the professional world that I was in to doing this. As I was making that transition, my life just seemed very disordered, and my head seemed very disordered, and it was affecting my relationships negatively. And I saw having some kind of system, almost maybe like putting myself inside a machine,
yep.
you know, was what I needed to do yep. if I ever wanted to have a healthy relationship with myself or healthy relationships with other people. So in 2013, you know, after some bad personal times, I embrace GTD, Evernote, that whole world.
Yeah.
But like Andrew was saying, it wasn't connected to anything that was like a vision, like a purpose. It was about checking boxes.
Right.
Because that's what I learned.
Which is still better than doing nothing.
It is better than doing nothing, but it also eventually leads to this kind of frustration because you're like, well, I'm so productive.
Right.
I'm checking so many boxes.
But what am I actually getting done?
What is actually getting done?
Right.
Now, the other side of that, or like, when you do read GTD, he talks about these horizons of focus. Mm-hmm. You're probably familiar with the concept. He uses like, you know, there's an airplane runway, mm-hmm. right? And most people can't even clear their runway, so a plane can get up to the speed where it needs to take off, you know? That was my life very much in 2013. There was too much clutter. I've described it as like, you know, there's like a swarm of bees around you of all these things you haven't identified and you haven't put them in their proper place.
Right.
So you're just kind of consumed by it. David Allen describes these horizons, right? So the first horizon is like, you know, the immediate things that you're working on.
Your next actions.
Your next actions. And then that scales to bigger projects. And eventually, like, what is the purpose of your work and what is the purpose of you?
Right.
Jake DeSillis, who I've had on the show before. Have you ever worked with him?
I have not worked with him, no.
He has a site called The Voluntary Life. Very successful entrepreneur. And he does a lot of work on productivity and personal development. And he entered this quote into the record on my show a few years ago. I don't remember who said it, but it was this idea of like, build your castles in the sky. Very similar to what you were saying. And if they're exciting, you know, these castles that you can see in the sky, you'll figure out how to connect them to the ground.
Ambitious goals. This is something that I pick up largely from Peter Thiel, is like, you want to have what he calls a definite optimism. Mm-hmm. There were people in the United States at one point who decided, I am going to drain the San Francisco Bay. And I am going to build all this farmland and all these communities inside the San Francisco Bay. It never happened, but there were people who decided we were going to go to the moon. There were people who decided we were going to build the San Francisco, the Golden Gate Bridge. When does that happen anymore? You need to have that for your own life, at least. I'm not saying that everyone needs to go build the Golden Gate Bridge. One of the reasons I love being in Pittsburgh is there's all these bridges here, but they set the Liberty Bridge on fire. They don't even know how to repair bridges anymore, let alone build them.
Mm-hmm.
But people need to at least set something like this in their own lives. But the issue you run into, that I have run into, especially coming from a community where I interact with a lot of very, very ambitious, competent people. The thing about ambitious, competent people that I come back to all the time, especially when we're talking about higher education, is they'll be successful whether or not they go to college.
Right. Yeah.
And Brian Kaplan's new book pretty much lays this out, where the people who can get by, who should go to college, are also kind of the people who would be successful without college.
Is a stop on the ambitious, potentially successful person's
path. Right,
back.
Exactly.
So because that's kind of like schooled into them that it needs to be.
Right. If you're a smart, competent person, it's just what you do.
Right.
It's just expected of you. But the issue that I run into more often with them is, okay, you know, I've read David Allen, or I've done all these productivity systems and all these books, and maybe I've gotten this good job, but why am I doing the things that I'm doing? You know, they lack the ability to set meaningful goals, which comes back to my complaining earlier about all these goal setting workshops that self-help gurus will run. People can set a goal, but if it's not a goal that actually has some sort of meaning for you or is conducive to building a life you actually want to live, then what's the point of it?
All right, so let me throw out an idea and you tell me if this is something you've run into in your consulting and coaching.
Okay.
Without naming names. If I were, I said to myself at many points in my life, to construct, and I have, and believe me, I've done it, but here's the fear that I was always aware of while I was doing it. If I develop some kind of purpose, right, which is a form of like shooting at something, this is what I want to achieve, this is what I want to realize with my existence.
Mm-hmm.
If I miss, right? What does that say? Who am I?
Oh, yeah.
What am I?
That's a very schooled fear of failure that people have.
So the fear,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about how often, even though you're working with like a special kind of person,
yeah.
Right? This fear must still be present.
Yeah, and the reframe I'll often take to them is, look, you'll still be in a better place having shot for that than if you didn't at all, right? So the way I like to imagine the system that I've developed, it really has like... It's got three big components to it, and you know, one of the ones that we can talk about is the ambition mapping component, which itself breaks into three components. Is imagine that there is some target off somewhere, like you're standing on the top of a mountain, and there's a target somewhere on the horizon, right? It's a 4-foot by 4-foot target. There isn't really some platonic target out there in the reality of people's lives. That is one thing I remind them of, is there isn't like some platonic ideal of what you should do. The reality is, if you find work that you're effective at, and if you find work that you can see yourself growing through, this is something that Nathaniel Brandon brings up, this is something that some of the Jungian psychologists bring up, this is something that Jordan Peterson has brought up on numerous occasions, that people don't feel fulfilled by achieving things, they feel fulfilled by experiencing growth towards the achievement of meaningful goals.
And that, I think, is really, really difficult for the average person to sort of wrap their mind around and actually understand that.
Right. I mean, it's hard for the average person in particular, but if you're talking to an ambitious person who has stayed on that kind of ambitious path for a long time, mm-hmm. they will identify with this.
Right.
So it's often like you get into college and this was the ideal that you were supposed to achieve for like 12 years straight. And then it's like, this is it.
Right, because you've kind of made it to your target, but you never look beyond it.
And you don't know why the target's there, mm-hmm. right? So just imagine that you're standing on this mountaintop and there's this horizon. There's mm-hmm. something out there that you can hit. Now, getting closer to that is better than just wandering through those woods. And having some kind of way of landing closer to that is better than just standing on top of the mountaintop.
Yeah, I think that actually might be part of the fear, though. Because it's so far away and because it's so big, if you do get there...
Let's imagine that the area right around you on the mountaintop is full of mountain lions that are going to tear you apart, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. as you get closer and closer to where that target is, the environment generally gets better.
Right.
That's the way I like to imagine it. Because the first thing I walk people through is, let's get away from the shitty stuff in your life.
Yeah.
Let's get away from the things that for your job, if you did these day in and day out at your job, you would want to step in front of a bus.
Right.
Because if you end up in a job like that, it doesn't matter if it's a high-paying, powerful job. You will hate your life. And that is not any kind of success for any kind of person who has the ability to succeed at most things that they apply themselves towards.
Right.
Does that answer that?
I think so. But I think just as far as like reframing for people, mm-hmm. what's missing in your reframing, and this kind of like goes to like how we kind of try to help each other and hold each other accountable. I mentioned this a few minutes ago, is what's missing is their ego. Right. Mm-hmm. It seems like it would be a huge factor. Like that's not in your head.
Right.
Right. So it seems like it would almost be really, really difficult to get to the root of the fear or the self-doubt.
I believe in a concept that some other people have called pay for value, where it's like you pay other people to push you.
Yeah.
And if you don't pay them enough too, you're just going to be like, oh, well, that's, you know, the $5 I spent to sit down with Brett for him to tell me you need to pull yourself together. If I gave you $1,000 and I didn't do it, then it's like, again, it's a sunk cost fallacy, but it works.
I think there's also a fear of being held accountable for your own goals and own achievements.
Mm-hmm.
For example, like I really like the idea of mastery. I like the idea of mastering myself at different things, and I don't have nearly enough things that I consider myself masterful at.
Yep.
But one thing that I just naturally kind of wrapped my mind around and became very good at a young age was controlling a vehicle,
mm-hmm.
driving, right? But I never gauged it by any real metric, no measurable, you know, metric.
I mean, that's a skill that's more defined by negatives. Like you didn't get run off the road, you didn't crash the car or anything like that, you didn't spin out.
Sure. And then for years and years and years, I always sort of prided myself on being good at this, but I had no way to really gauge how good I was or compare myself to anybody else. So a few years ago, just kind of out of the blue, I entered a car race,
mm-hmm.
and it was a very structured race where it all came down to the driver, not the car.
Yep.
And my first event, I had never done this before. There's a lot of skill involved, and I won.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh my God, that felt great. I don't know why I was so scared. I did it again, and I won. Whole season went by, and I won the season. The next season came, and I won again. The next season came, and some things changed. I don't know if I changed at all. I certainly felt like I improved, but so did everybody else, and I didn't win.
Mm-hmm.
I got second.
Mm-hmm.
And that destroyed me.
Yeah, I mean, I see this with high-achieving people all the time because, you know, they're always getting A's throughout school.
Mm-hmm.
They graduate top of their class. They go to a prestigious, fancy job, which is very much built like school at a large corporation. And then they go out and they start their own business or something, and they're courting 4 clients doing business development, and they only land one of them.
Mm.
And it's the first time they're, like, really told no in their careers. The first time that they're told, sorry.
And I think a lot of it is sort of refocusing yourself and going, okay, well, what made me want to do this in the first place? How much did I, you know, enjoy doing this when I just simply wanted to have fun? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't so much about winning.
Yeah, reclaiming that playful element's really important.
I've you know, set goals for myself to enter other types of racing, not this one particular series. And I've been reluctant to really make solid progress towards those goals because I'm afraid to put in all this energy and effort and to build that car and get to that event and then not do well.
Right.
But it's not the end goal. The end goal isn't making it to that event. The end goal is continuing to improve over the years. I mean, right. This is the rest of my life I'm looking at, not just, okay, hopefully I can make it to one event by the end of the year.
Right. And I think the important point, both with this example and going back to the David Allen stuff, is you want to make progress towards meaningful goals, right? Progress or achievement without some sort of progress towards something that's meaningful, it ends up just being busyness.
And that has what has made all the difference, I think, for me, is being able to make connections and to see this hierarchy between purpose. Because it's real easy to say, you know, I have this purpose or I have this vision or the mission of School Sucks Project is this.
Yeah.
And then to say, oh, and I also have all these little boxes I have to check. But there's tons of disconnection in between.
Right.
And what can throw you completely off track, like you said earlier, is the ego.
That's part of it. So at the one hand, I'm down in the weeds going, I'm doing stuff. And then there's this thing that's way far away and go, oh, I'm never going to get that. But I'm just, you know, I mean, it's kind of like this contradictory mindset, but I'm going to keep doing stuff. So I feel like it. When you actually build the connections between those things.
Yeah.
You know, and this is actually, it's funny, like somehow we only have an hour left and we have a ton of stuff to still get to. Right. And I want to make sure that we can transition into talking about ambition mapping ASAP. And I want you to finish your reframes for people with these fears as well. But saying, okay, this is a purpose or this is my vision. And you can have multiple visions across different domains of life. I mean, life divides into several areas. There's a professional area. There's like a health and fitness area. There's a relationship area. There's a financial area. And there's tons of overlap between them, but they can all have their own unique visions. The visions turn into goals,
yep.
Right? Or they scale down into goals. I mean, you think about it like a pyramid or...
I say it's an inverted funnel.
Okay, so. Okay, sure. It's an inverted funnel... An inverted funnel is kind of shaped like a pyramid.
Yes.
Awesome.
I like the idea of a funnel because things roll into funnels, and I can get into that analogy right. In a little bit.
No, but I'm encouraged. I like when I check my work.
It's an anti-gravity funnel. Things float up to the top visions.
Right, exactly.
So if the capstone, if I may stick with the pyramid,
yeah.
Is, or the opening at the funnel.
The
right.
Tiny hole.
Yeah, the tiny hole.
The apex. The
okay,
yeah.
Right, is the vision. Then what is holding up that directly underneath it are, you know, long to medium term goals.
Right. And what you want to do is you want to break these things down to make them really manageable.
Until they become projects
and those projects can be habituated, right?
Yep.
Into systems.
And now my little boxes to check makes sense, right? They are the absolute foundation of something that is meaningful and compelling.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
So let's talk specifically about what you've been developing. You call it ambition mapping, and you actually developed this out of Nathaniel Brandon's work.
Yeah, it came, you know, it's one of these things that kind of came together over the last couple of years, but I actually sat down and made it into a system that I tested with people.
Mm-hmm.
And then I gave it to like some teachers and they went out and tested it in their classrooms and they came back with pretty positive results. And we've tweaked it here and there and I've built different versions on top of it. But for any of your listeners who are familiar with your series on Nathaniel Brandon and self-esteem, you know, he's for those who aren't familiar with him in particular, he was a psychotherapist really through like the 80s and the 90s, kind of an acolyte of Ayn Rand. He's one of the big fathers really of self-esteem as a legitimate concept and not just like everyone gets a trophy. And he hated that part of the self-esteem movement. But one of the tools that he really popularized was sentence stems and sentence completion exercises, where it's you start with something like one of the ones I use in my guide is, you know, I feel most unhappy when I, and you just finish the sentence, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, I kind of, for lack of a better phrase, really dicked around with these for a couple of years when I first came across Brandon's work. And you know, like the productivity systems you were talking about earlier, Andrew, they were things I was like, okay, I guess these work, but I'm not getting much out of them. And then I was actually thrown into this position where I had a strong incentive to figure a lot of this stuff out for myself, and they just clicked one day. I also did a workshop with an organization that does something similar with sentence stems. But ambition mapping is really a set of tools you can use to get to answering that question of setting meaningful goals.
So right? Let's pause there for a second, and just to stick with Brandon's sentence stems, what are the outcomes that people are looking for by saying this? So most of the sentence stems, they appear in a lot of his books, but mm-hmm. most prominently or most, you know, completely in The Art of Self-Discovery, which yeah. is an entire book just composed of all these sentence stems, and it divides into like different areas of your life, like my mom, my dad, childhood. There's another chapter on relationships. I found it to be very helpful, and the process is, you know, you get this prompt and you try to basically tap into the subconscious.
You try to finish it without even thinking about finishing it.
Right. You want to just write continuously, not like anyone is checking your work. And then you actually go back and you try to review and make meaning out of it after the fact. So it is sort of like an accessing the subconscious kind of process. But how would you, Zach, how would you just describe what Brandon is shooting for?
One of the things I come back to consistently is we are an amalgam of like many different selves, right? Like there are a lot of parts that contribute into being what is Brett, what is Andrew, what is Zach, right?
Right.
Where we're very complex, and this process of introspection there's not like some single self that controls, is like the CEO of this corporation or CEO of like a startup that is you, right? It's more like a very large, complex corporation like Ford, where it's like, oh, there's business divisions I didn't even know existed. Huh, that's weird. Why do they exist? What do they do? I'm not sure what they do. They're not sure what they do. I can't seem to talk to them. That's confusing. So the sentence stems in Brandon's work is one way that you can kind of tap into that, right? Where some of his stuff with parents, for example, you know, when mother gets angry at me, I feel, right? And you just write down what comes to you. Mm-hmm. And at first, when you do these, it's really hard. You feel... I feel really awkward, or I felt really awkward when I first started doing them. I found that they didn't really flow. And then for me, more than anything else, actually saying them aloud was what really helped me more than writing them. I don't know, for whatever reason.
No, that's something I've heard in a lot of different contexts, like reviewing your notes aloud or reading things that, you know, that you wrote down and you've already kind of had those thoughts and put them on paper, but reading them aloud to yourself or repeating the same thing every day,
they don't even sound like you.
Right. And it actually makes more of an impact on yourself for whatever reason. There's that auditory...
I think with something emotional, it makes it real, right? Because mm-hmm. I've reread a bunch of stuff that I've written and I go just say it aloud with your own voice.
I actually started doing these in earnest, I would find that my palms got sweaty while doing them.
Yeah,
they're very uncomfortable.
Yeah,
and they should be. Yeah. If they're not uncomfortable, you're probably not doing them in earnest.
Right.
So one of the things I really like about them is, you know, we are an amalgam of like many selves, but those many selves create the life that we live, the day in and the day out, in the decisions that we make.
Are you familiar with the term self-leadership?
I'm not.
Okay. So there's a book. Now, when we talk about, there was a lot of psychology directed towards parts of self, and the child self was probably introduced. I mean, that is probably an older concept, but it gained a lot of popularity in the 1970s. Mm-hmm. And Brandon was somebody who definitely was very vocal on this idea of the child self, or less resourceful, more emotionally weakened parts of self. Mm-hmm. With the development of internal family systems therapy, which you're probably somewhat familiar with.
It's an outgrowth of a lot of Jungian depth psychology.
Right. So the idea that at times where there were where an individual experienced trauma, the personality would fracture and a new self would be created. So a lot of these child selves, where probably most people's traumas in life occur, when we're the least emotionally resourceful, when we lack, you know, perspective or wisdom to deal with these. So even, you know, seemingly sometimes insignificant things to an adult can be traumatic to a child. This creates this, you know, family of selves inside the person. So there's a book called The Body Keeps the Score. It's written by Bessel van der Kolk.
I've never actually read this, but I've heard great things about it.
This is a phenomenal book. The audiobook, which I highly recommend, is read by the same genius of a voice actor who does Renegade History of the United States.
Okay.
So it's that I was totally in when I learned that. But the concept of self-leadership is basically the awareness of all these parts mm-hmm. of self and the ability to lead them. So that was actually an interesting connection to Brandon's work with The Art of Self-Discovery. You can look at these voices that are coming through in the sentence stems. And on different days, they might be different voices, you know? I mean, and that's like a really interesting thing to keep track of. I mean, but leading them in the end, like being able to be a kind of mediator, but also to accept.
I mean, I like to think of it as herding cats, right? And when you're herding anything, you want to kind of like push it along in a certain direction.
Mm-hmm.
And cats are difficult to herd. And the self is difficult to herd. So
that's a very realistic way to talk about it.
Yeah. And,
right?
And you know, one of the points I want to emphasize, I'm willing to dive deeper into this speaking with you because, you know, you've read a lot of Brandon. You've done like 20 hours of content with him. A lot of your longtime listeners are going to be more familiar with him. One of the things I emphasize with a lot of my clients and that I emphasize in the new book I'm working on and all these things is I'm not a psychotherapist.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, I don't entirely know why these things work. I just know that they do. And that's really all that matters at the end of the day.
Right.
If you try applying them until you get some kind of progress out of them, you will see that they work. And I find that with like a lot of this stuff in personal development, you have to at least come into it with the perspective of some people I know who I trust say that this works. Let's see if it works for me.
Yeah. No, right? Absolutely. That's how everything I ever tried worked for me.
Yeah.
You know,
if you come in with like, oh, that sounds like self-help bullshit. It's like, well, then you're probably not going to get much out of it.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons why I've worked so hard to explain that Brandon's idea of self-esteem is not.
Yeah, I don't even like the phrase self-esteem. You know, when I was pitching this book to some of my editors and I would bring up Brandon, I'd say, you know, the psychotherapist Nathaniel Brandon, yada, yada, yada. And they would say, oh, did he write any books? And I was like, well, he wrote this one book, The Six Pillars of Self-Esteem. And then I'd have to explain. No, it's not like this kitschy idea of self-esteem.
And it's not
the
easiest thing to convince somebody either once they have that bias against
it
already.
Right.
Right. Oh,
no, I mean, the way I describe self-esteem to my friends who are interested in it, you know, first of all, if I'm introducing them to Brandon, the first thing I give them is actually The Psychology of Romantic Love, which can be a little awkward if you're giving people a copy of that book. But I actually think that's a better book talking about Brandon's concepts of like individuation and being able to see yourself in other people, like this reflexive ability to identify with other people.
Sure,
there's a concept in that book that I find ridiculously useful, which is that high self-esteem people tend to be attracted to high self-esteem people. Low self-esteem people tend to be attracted to low self-esteem people. And in the few cases where you get a high self-esteem person attracted to low self-esteem person, the low self-esteem person drags the high self-esteem person down. That's really important.
Yep.
But I always give that book first to people because I think that's actually a really great application of a lot of Brandon's thoughts on integrity and self-esteem, because self-esteem being how you esteem yourself. Like if I asked you, you know, what do you think of Brett? You'd be able to hopefully say something good about Brett.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. Like, what do I think about Zach? Well, I like to think that I'd be able to say good things about Zach.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that when I'm actually setting goals in my career is I want to set goals that are actually a function of whoever Zach is, not just like this sort of mimetic desire to pursue things that other people want. Which is, I think, what most people default to.
And that's actually, I think, a signal of, you know, lots of questions about self and maybe low self-esteem, where it's like, okay, well, you know, it was funny that I was looking at the prompts that you wrote for the ambition mapping, right? And it was in a Medium article. I'll link it in the show notes. But you said, here's an example of somebody who's using these these stems that I provided. So at one
and I've
point...
And I've got the entire, like, essentially workbook that your listeners can download.
And that
well.
Will be linked in the show notes for this episode as well. But because I've been doing my own thing for a while, you know, the first phase of ambition mapping might not be as ideal for me as it would be for maybe somebody else.
Yeah.
Because I'm kind of like disconnected from a lot
of
it.
You're also pretty deep into this personal development stuff.
Yeah.
So for a lot of people, if it's they've kind of dicked around with personal development, but they've never actually started applying it, especially in their career.
Mm-hmm. So he and I were sitting in the office upstairs back to back and writing responses to some of these prompts. And at one point I knew what the prompt was. I had written it on a piece of paper and I took my phone and I said, what did the other guy say?
Oh, yeah, I did that too. Right.
Because I was, and it reminded me of all the times in my life that I've done that, that I've done that very thing. Well, what should I think?
This has been one of the hardest things for me. I've really wanted to get ambition mapping into classrooms because there are actually a lot of like John Taylor Gatto type teachers out there who understand that the school system is crushing their students and they still want to try to fix it. So I want to try to provide them with resources. But one of the hardest things about using this in a classroom setting is students are always thinking, what does the teacher want?
Exactly.
What does the teacher want? What do other students want?
And that is one of the most important. And it changes, you know. Like,
and this is a very private exercise.
Yeah.
Like a lot of Brandon's exercises, it's a very private one. I'll sometimes review what my clients will say, but I won't tell them beforehand that I'm going to, and I will only do it if they allow me to. I don't demand to see it from them.
See, that was a problem for me with any kind of putting thoughts to paper, like journaling, for example. Is my whole life journaling was simply something I had to do for English class.
Yeah.
And well, even then, I didn't do it.
In that case, I come in with a similar bias is try to do it aloud.
Yep.
Like into a voice memo on your phone.
Yeah. And I think that could be helpful. And I think a big part of it, too, is getting back to that mentality. You have to be open to these ideas and you'll be surprised at what motivates you to improve yourself, too. Whether it's a system like this, whether it's simply a thought process, a habit. You know, habit forming mentalities where, I'm going to try and do this thing first in the morning every day and I'm going to develop that habit and now I've become reliant on it. And that's great. Or trying to kick a habit. But what's interesting is I've had some motivators in the weirdest places. Like recently I bought a car a couple months ago and it's a car unlike anything I ever had. And if we haven't noticed, cars are very important to me. But one thing that has motivated me and helped me in a lot of areas is simply, okay, I want to be the kind of person that drives this car around.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? I don't want to be the kind of person driving my old shitty truck, you know, that's loud and obnoxious and ugly and dirty and whatever. So I get in this car, and if I'm not dressed nicely,
yeah,
I go, I don't want to be seen getting out of
this
car. The
reality is, too, people are going to treat you better if you dress a little bit better. And
absolutely.
And you're going to treat yourself better.
Like,
this is one of the things that when I'm talking with people, especially like 18-year-olds, like 18-year-old technically men, but essentially boys who are just now pulling themselves together for the first time, one of the first things I tell them is buy clothing that fits and go to the gym.
If nothing else, fake it.
Yeah.
Plug your blog article in this, by the way, and I'll link that. No, 2018 rules for young men.
18 rules for young men in 2018. I wrote this at the end of last year. So.
It's good for medium age and old men, too, I would say.
And I've had several women tell me it's good for women as well.
Yeah. So I want to talk about how you developed ambition mapping.
Right.
Andrew and I, like I was saying, before you got here, we went through just the first phase of it, and we did, I think there were 6 prompts in that phase, but that's just the beginning. So I want to talk about your process for developing it. We talked about, you know, where it came from, but let's put it all together.
Yeah, so it's a 3-phase process that you can really do. I recommend people do it over 3 days because you shouldn't do all this at once. It's overwhelming and it's stressful. And it was developed out of just years of different experiences working with people who were starting their careers, some of whom were through Praxis, some of whom were one-on-one clients, one of whom was myself, right?
Yeah.
And also running into all these people who are selling like these goal setting exercises, and people get so caught up and stressed out where it's like, I don't know what my big goal should be.
Right.
Or thinking about in terms of dream jobs, right?
Right.
There are people out there selling you products on how to get a dream job. Great, but then a lot of people get so stressed out that they don't know what their quote-unquote dream job is that they never even try to set going after a better job in the first place.
Right.
So I thought to myself, okay, how can we develop a system that would allow people to, that one, actually be a system, and two, allow people to work towards having some sort of meaningful milestones that they can develop in their lives, right? And it was a combination of both just watching people in general, and then, you know, my former colleague Isaac Morehouse has a book titled Don't Do Stuff You Hate, and that was kind of something that he pounded into my head, and working with other people is, if you're doing things that you truly day in and day out hate, you're not going to be very good at them, first of all. And secondly, if you're doing them day in and day out, they're going to wear on you. So the very first thing you need to do when you're sitting down to figure out, you know, how do I want my career to look? How do I want my family life to look? Whatever it is. I primarily work in terms of careers and business, so that's the context for everything here for me, is don't end up somewhere that would be miserable for you.
Right.
Don't end up somewhere where you will be highly ineffective, right? Let's go back to the key phrase that operates as background for everything I'm talking about here. fulfillment does not come from achievement. It comes from progress towards the achievement of meaningful goals.
Absolutely.
Okay, so how do we get to the point? There's a lot of words we need to define there, but how do we get to the point of meaningful goals, right? And then how do we get to progress towards, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing we need to do is we need to remove all the ones that aren't meaningful, all the ones that are going to chew away at us every single day. So there's this concept. I was originally introduced to it by Nassim Taleb in his book Anti-Fragile, but you can dig into it in like Thomist philosophy that largely comes from the philosopher St. Thomas Aquinas, of that's called via negativa.
Mm-hmm.
So that means like through the negative. And what Aquinas was trying to figure out was, how do we define God, or how do we define the divine, or how do we define holy? And instead of asking, you know, what are, and debating all these characteristics of God, right, we can ask, well, what is God not? What is the holy not?
Mm-hmm.
What is the divine not? And then we work through a process of elimination. So you can imagine, by removing all these characteristics that you don't want, you get a silhouette of something, right? And that silhouette is better than having nothing there, right? And then you can fill in the details of the silhouette. I also like to think of it, there is a reason I call it ambition mapping. If you're going somewhere, you don't just drive in that direction. You know, if you're driving to San Francisco, you don't just start driving west. You figure out what the address is that you're going to in San Francisco, and then you work backwards, and you eliminate all the other places you don't want to drive to as a function of driving to San Francisco, right?
Okay.
And you will end up driving west, but eventually, you know, you have to turn southwest, or I don't know directly to get to San Francisco from Pittsburgh. I would fly. But via negativa is figuring out, what are the things that day in and day out you don't want to build for your career, right? And we use the sentence completion exercises to figure that out. So you work through some stems like, I feel most unhappy when I dread, I love the word dread, because there are people who they wake up every day and they dread their jobs, because there's usually something in their job that's a defining characteristic of that job that they dread. I am good at, but I don't particularly enjoy. That's a good one. That's a particularly important one for people who are highly effective and ambitious, because they often get pushed into careers that they're good at, but they hate it. Right.
And there's money.
And there's money in it.
Right. And they don't. So they see the money, which is kind of a bait. You know, but unfortunately, they fail to see the trap that surrounds it too often.
I cannot imagine doing blank for the rest of my life, right? I don't understand why anybody would, and then blank just does not appeal to me at all.
Let me ask you a question. We're talking now about the negative, and we're going to move to the positive in a second. But you have said the negatives, or the things that I don't want, the things I want to avoid, are more constant throughout life.
Yes.
And this makes perfect sense. You know, like,
there are a lot of reasons why we start with via negativa.
Okay.
And, you know, a lot of people I'm working with are under 35, they're relatively young, and they're making investments that they want to develop throughout their entire careers, right?
Okay.
And instead of thinking in terms of what's the thing that you love? What's your dream job? What's your dream career? That's going to change.
Yeah.
You know, the things that I thought would be my dream job 4 years ago are different now.
Absolutely. Where I was a year and a half ago, anything that I put on the positive side would probably be significantly different than where it's at today.
Yeah, but the negatives tend to stay relatively constant.
For the most part. I see that based on the exercise Brett and I went through earlier.
Yeah. And for a lot of people, the things that do change in the negatives are like, you know, you talk to an 18-year-old kid and he says he doesn't want to have kids. And then, okay, talk to me when you're 30.
Mm-hmm.
Most people probably do. Not everyone does, but a lot of people do. But outside of like family goals, a lot of things don't change on the negative side.
And I see this being extremely helpful for what I'm struggling with GTD, or just my personal development too. I, like you said, Brett, checking off boxes and working on all these next actions, that's what most of your time is spent on, right? And then at the top of your funnel, the tiny hole at the top, right? You have your life's purpose and your vision. But I think I see this helping me connect the top and the bottom of the funnel. Yep. I really see it bringing those
two
together.
This is really an entire process of something called reverse induction. And that largely came about just like, I ended up both through the business development I was doing. I did a short podcast for a little while and talking to a lot of people who I just considered really successful, who really enjoyed their careers, really enjoyed their jobs of varying ages. A lot of them use the process of reverse induction. They figured out the general direction in which they want to go, and then they worked backwards from there. So that's the final stage of the ambition mapping process. So via negativa is, let's remove everything that you shouldn't be spending your time on. I can be really effective at watching grass grow. I'm not going to be fulfilled at doing that.
Sure.
And I think for the listeners out there, anyone who isn't already on this path to a degree, I think they could probably benefit a lot from these exercises. But I think it would really help anybody who is where I'm at and started down this path, no matter how far you might be, but I just see it. I see a lot of potential for me to be able to sort of fill in the gaps that currently are missing.
I almost built this out to being its own like kind of info product course, mm-hmm. and it was going to be called Find Your Focus. So if you're someone who you're sitting around, you feel like you lack clarity or you lack focus in the things that you're doing, mm-hmm. this is really designed for you, right? It's designed to bring clarity to people's careers.
Right.
Especially when you have, you know, if you're an effective person, you have a lot of opportunities in front of you. Mm-hmm. So don't think in terms of what's the one opportunity I need to choose. Rather think in terms of how can I get closer to a place that is better?
Absolutely.
That's how ambition mapping works. So first we start with the via negativa. Then the next day I encourage people to sit down and do what would just be called the via positiva, right? So we already know that there's all this set of characteristics or outcomes that are not going to be things that you want in your life or in your job. And then there is something that you do want. You may not know exactly what that is. And this is where I think actually doing it as a sentence completion exercise is really, really helpful. Going back to what we were talking about of the structure of Brandon's exercises. Mm-hmm. And some of the prompts for this are, I feel the time pass effortlessly when I, because that's that state of flow that you want to get into, right? For mm-hmm. me, that's writing. I like to write a lot. And if I get into about 30 to 40 minutes into writing, I can look up from the clock 2 hours later and have 5,000 words in front of me. Mm-hmm. So any kind of work where I'm allowed to write a lot, and that's actually an important part of my job, is something I will really enjoy. I feel most fulfilled when I look up to people who, because we often choose models not very consciously. There are certain people in our lives who we just want to be around. We want to learn from. I mean, you guys were talking about your relationship earlier, where Brett's almost, in the personal development sense, a model for you, Andrew.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had to say your name because I realized people aren't going to be seeing this
right.
on video.
Right. You could have been pointing at like a whole huge audience of people.
Right.
You know,
right.
Brett is the model.
Right, yes.
My most constant interests are, and that's something that, you know, a lot of your interests do change throughout life, but there are some that are relatively constant. I would not want to miss out on, and even if it's challenging, I really enjoy. And that's an inverse of the via negativa prompt, which was, I'm good at, but I don't particularly enjoy, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So there are certain things that are just very challenging, but you really enjoy doing them. Mm-hmm. And these are certain activities that you should engage in more often. You should get better at them because they are ones that you're going back to what you were saying earlier about the David Allen system, Andrew. They are these activities that when you engage with them, you're going to experience a sense of growth.
Yeah, they're fulfilling.
Yeah, absolutely. And then in the third day, you sit down and you review your sentence stems from the previous 2 days. And you might have to do a little bit of research on this, but usually a couple of things come directly to people's minds. And what you want to do is you want to find what's the intersection of these two areas. What is a job, for example, that you can do that doesn't include any of the things that you hate doing and includes more of the things that you do enjoy,
right?
The characteristics you do enjoy. And you might have to do a little bit of research how to get there, but then you sit down and you do what is actually in my system called the ambition map, right? This is something where you set something like you want to own your own online business that sells instruction to stay-at-home moms for doing yoga, right? Mm-hmm. Some real niche thing,
right?
And then you figure out, okay, how do I get to that? Well, you might have to interview some people who've done something similar. You might have to do some research online. But then you set sub-goals, right? In order to become that, I need to do X.
You work backwards until you yep. find an action.
You work backwards until you find an immediate action that you can take as soon as you're done building the ambition map.
Yeah.
And now you have literally a step-by-step process that you can follow to get to a job or a career that you're going to enjoy a lot more than the one you're currently in.
I love it. I like how it's different, but it's following exactly the same principles that, like, as I have readjusted and rethought this productivity busyness system mm-hmm. for years, like what I've developed just fairly recently, it is this idea, right? It is the connection between all of these points, yeah. between all of these levels or horizons, as David Allen calls them.
You know, some of the things I enjoy from some of the personal development people is the importance of setting, you know, big ambitious goals. But if you can't make those big ambitious goals tangible and something you can act on now, and if you don't have both some kind of pain and pleasure associated with it, you're not going to work on it.
Absolutely. I mean, and sometimes it is still a challenge, and this might have to be a conversation for another time, to actually figure out like how to group projects together mm-hmm. that feed that really big, ambitious goal. Yeah. You know, what is a realistic, if this is really ambitious, what is a realistic 3-month goal? What is a realistic 1-year goal? What is a realistic 2- or 3-year goal?
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to understand that. But I think the forward progress
yes.
towards that yes. meaningful goal completely energizes.
This gives people some kind of definition of, yes. going back to that phrase we were talking yes. about earlier, you know, progress towards the achievement of meaningful goals. Okay, now you have a goal that's actually meaningful because it's attached to both the via negativa and the via positiva.
Right.
And you've got a path to make progress on it.
And you can,
and you can adjust it.
You can't expect all the questions that you just asked, Brett, to get answered immediately either. They're going to get filled in over time as you continue to implement these ideas and these systems and as you work at
and
it.
And I encourage people, look, if you're going through it and you have, maybe you didn't realize there was something involved in this job that you thought was going to be the great job that you wanted to go achieve, you can redo the ambition map and you're still going to be in a much better place than you'd be if you didn't start it.
And if your immediate thought is, well, this isn't applicable to me. For example, a lot of this is geared towards, going after your dream job, your dream career, or your own business, you know, kind of spinning off or rebooting or restarting, doing something more to your liking. It certainly applies to me where I currently like my job.
Mm-hmm.
I have no intention of leaving, but my job is one which where I can really mold it and shape it into what I want it to be.
Yeah.
I'm very autonomous in that sense.
I can tell you, it was funny. I was talking to my literary agent the other day. We actually got a preliminary offer from a relatively large publisher for the book, which was huge excitement. And it kind of all became real to me. And it's like, oh, wow, the stuff I'm actually writing about in the book, I have to go back and apply to my own process of writing
mm-hmm.
the book.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I've got these systems set up like the ambition mapping. I've done a new ambition map specifically around writing the book. And then I've done a different ambition map specifically around selling the book and promoting the book.
When you're constantly helping others go through these procedures and processes, how often do you neglect implementing them yourself? On yourself or on your own projects?
I've gotten pretty good at building in systems that allow me to get other people to give me some sort of feedback.
Mm-hmm.
So those might be, you know, I've got a copywriting coach, for example. I've got a digital strategy coach. But there are definitely, and thankfully I live with a roommate who's like really obsessed with this kind of productivity stuff as well.
See, I think that's really helpful because
it is helpful.
I am helping, not to the degree that you are, but I'm helping others, you know, around me, and I'm questioning them about what's going on with them, what's a goal they want to achieve. And, you know, passively, sometimes actively, I will kind of coach them
yeah.
and help them along just because I find it to be fun and fulfilling. However, many times I'm laying out a clear path. Oh, you should absolutely do this, X, Y, Z, or try doing this and see what comes out, whatever it might be. And then I think, oh, but I'm not even following that advice myself.
Right. It's funny. On an earlier break, we were talking about how sometimes my roommate Josh and I will sit down and we'll record just one of the conversations we have that's like this.
Mm-hmm.
And there may or may not be a bottle of wine involved as well. But we've recently done one where it's a concept that Josh uses called coaching yourself, right? Or having a coaching session with yourself where you're running into a problem or a mental block, or let's say you're just overwhelmed with stuff at work, right? What if you were talking to someone whose future you were invested in and you wanted them to do well? What would you tell them? Well, then apply that to yourself.
Exactly. I've always struggled with taking my own advice.
Yeah, you kind of, it's a reframe where you take a step away from the situation. You look at the situation. It's like, okay, if I were talking to somebody else who I really cared about, who was smart and competent, what would I tell them?
Yeah.
And then try applying it.
I mean,
it's better than not doing anything.
Absolutely. I mean, so many times where Brett's coming to me with an issue and I'm talking to him, I'm going, oh, look at me explaining to Brett what to do. Oh, yeah. And I'm very clear and focused on the outcome, and here's what success will look like. But if it were me going to him, I would not be able to see that so clearly
yeah.
like I can when it's him, because I'm not just all caught up on all the details that are swirling around in my head.
I will tell you, that's one of the reasons why I like going for large, relatively structured projects. Like for me, since again, I like to write, this mm-hmm. is like this book project I'm working on. There's a lot involved here that I can develop so much more in myself, so much more in my business, so much more in my network around the goal. It's like the gorilla we were talking about earlier, around the goal of making the book succeed.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think what's really valuable for me to, you know, let's talk about the book for a second. Okay. It's called How to get ahead when you feel you have nothing to offer?
Wait, how to get ahead when you have nothing to offer?
Oh, when you actually have nothing to offer. Okay, well, that's pretty serious.
We might, I don't know. I like that title. The publisher really likes the title, but that's the tentative title. It's scheduled to be May or June of next year.
This is also the title of a talk that you gave at the, what was it, the Going Deep Conference?
The Going Deep Summit. Aaron Watson here in Pittsburgh hosted. So okay. That's on YouTube as well.
Absolutely.
It's a very aggressive talk where I go out into the audience and I yell at people for why haven't you done X, Y, or Z.
Very salty. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. So number one, I think, was have something to achieve.
Yeah.
You know, this was the thing. I mean, I came into what I'm doing through libertarian thinking.
Really? Right? I would have never been able to tell.
No? Why not? How can you tell? Like, why is that so obvious sarcasm?
So how I was introduced to your show,
yeah,
and I've told this story to a lot of people because I had the opportunity to write the foreword to one of his books now, was I was putzing around on YouTube, and you've got a great narrated series on John Taylor Gatto's Underground History of American Education.
Mm-hmm.
And most people who are in that space are either like granola homeschoolers or libertarians.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what that between that and Nathaniel Brandon, it's just kind of obvious to me.
There's actually a very cool story here, Zach.
Okay.
This is a, and then I will get to my final point. No, let's end with the cool story and let's just deal with this point now. Number one, have something to achieve.
Yeah. Right? I mean, whether that's like, it doesn't even have to be like these very specific granular goals like we were talking about with the system here.
Right.
In the book, I do walk through ambition mapping. The book is like a whole system that builds on itself.
Right.
But it's just, you know, do you want to become an artist who makes money selling your art? Great. That's something to achieve right there. That's not a great goal because we can get specific, we can get measurable, we can get actionable, realistic, and timely, but that's better than nothing.
So my libertarian drive into this whole world was actually very libertine. I said, I'm going to do what I want every day. I'm going to have fun every day. No one's going to tell me what to do. I'm going to say, this is what I feel like doing, and I'm going to do it. And I'm going to produce new and entertaining things. And that's going to be my life.
Great.
Yeah, well,
that's a good example of something to achieve.
It's cool, and that's what I do, but it's more about the doing and not about the achievement of something larger,
mm-hmm.
right? So I told you when we were talking the other night that I've been going through and getting ready to rebuild School Sucks.
Yep.
I go back through our archives as I'm trying to connect things to like certain overarching topics,
yeah.
like alternative education, critical thinking, personal development, and what is the problem with school, or why does school suck? Those are like the four domains of our domain, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm going through the archives, and I'm going, what the hell was I thinking on, you know, January 7th, 2014? Why would I put out a show like this?
I did this the other day. I've had my site since I was like in high school. So I went back and I was looking at some of my old posts, and I thought the same thing. It's like, well, what was I thinking? But it's kind of a nice look back at your former self.
It is. And what I realize is I used to say yes. Someone would say, hey, would you do a show with this guy? Because he's cool. He's, you know, he's got...
we were talking about this the other night.
Right.
Too.
And I'd go, yeah, that would be cool. I like doing stuff that's cool.
So
right?
You didn't have your standards or your principles clearly laid out.
No. It wasn't about that. It was like, it was about purpose, right? Mm. Like, you're one of my favorite guys.
Yay.
But you would, if you were doing something completely disconnected from everything that I was doing, maybe we'd make a cool bonus show, but I wouldn't have like prepped and put aside 2.5 hours to do a podcast with you today anymore.
Right.
I mean, I would have done it once, and I've devoted a lot of time to that in the past, you know, but now if somebody is coming on School Sucks, it is very directional towards
yeah.
one of these four things and
right.
those and pursuing those four things and building authority on those four things is now connected to something larger.
Right.
So it is more like achievement oriented when it came from just this kind of libertine F work. I'm going to do what I want and have a fun, awesome time, man. You know,
but at least that got you started on something.
It did get me started. And it was actually like a nice decompression from
yeah.
spending more than a decade in this sort of facsimile education system.
Right.
See, what if you start out in that mentality, then you have to overcome it where
what do you mean?
Don't have a history of being stuck in any kind of specific structure. Before you sort of shake off the chains and then just do whatever you want, man. Right? Like, what if you start there, but don't really ever have a focus? Like, you were kind of being pulled in all different directions and not really, you know, going too deep in any one direction because your horizons were too vast.
Well, I think you have to provide value. Like profit and loss is like a really important signal. Like you, if you're doing something mm-hmm. that you're relying on to eat and live indoors and have a car and be able to put gas in it, like you have to be receiving signals. So I would kind of vaguely say, as I was transitioning away from work, I would say, well, this provides value. And it was like, I'd like to think I understand economics pretty well. I mean, not in any way that I was applying to the real world, you know, like, I mean, I've read the books, but I wasn't like actually connecting like, okay, this provides value is a nice thing to say, especially when donations come in and it seems to reinforce that, or people are monthly subscribers. But why does this provide value? To whom does this provide value? Like those kinds of questions were going unanswered. There weren't specific answers to those questions. So I could just say, oh, I'm doing whatever I want and it provides value. I'll just keep going forward. Right. And I took that from a very sort of like schooled and workaday mm-hmm. kind of mindset into this complete decompression of I'm going to do whatever I want.
I
realized I have to be deliberate and purposeful about how I'm producing. I have to understand what I'm doing. And it's I do work and people think that that's valuable. And that has to be turned into one of these machines.
I was just going to say, this is where I push back against a lot of the like passive income crowd, right? Like I don't really believe there is any such thing as real passive income.
Not without a lot of work first.
Right. Exactly. That's not really passive.
Right. Right. I edited an audiobook by Steve Pavlina, Smart Passive Income. And I learned a lot from the book, but let's finish with the cool story.
Is this the Gatto story?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So you were saying you learned about Gatto from those videos
yes.
that I made.
I believe I heard about Gatto through the videos and not like Wikipedia and then your videos.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a long time ago, you know, when we were talking like about me being in middle school or like junior high school, and I knew something was off about school. I knew I did well in it, but it was a weird system. My teachers were very frustrated. I grew up in the era like when No Child Left Behind was the big reform. So they were instituting all these standardized tests in schools for the first time.
Right.
My teachers resented them. We resented them. It was very, very, very unenjoyable. And I remember kind of poking around the internet just one day, and somehow, I don't know how, I stumbled across your narrated series of The Underground History of American Education by John Taylor Gatto. And it just kind of like lit a fire in my belly. And it was for the first time I found somebody who was, it's how a lot of people talk about with like Ayn Rand, mm-hmm. right? Where they read like The Fountainhead and it's like somebody put into words my thoughts that I've had my entire life, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like that for me with schooling.
Yeah, it just sort of solidifies your own beliefs and makes you more convicted in your own beliefs that you never really
It's the red
eloquently.
Meat that you really need. Yep. It's the red meat to go deeper, right?
Right, right. But here's where the story gets even cooler. Right. So you follow that.
Mm-hmm.
You listen to the show a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I have you on the show.
Yep.
We become friends
mm-hmm.
eventually. Then Jordan Peterson comes on the scene. Eventually he says, I like John Taylor Gatto.
He references Gatto in one of his Bible lectures.
Right. Zach tells me. And with Stefan Molyneux, too, he mentioned
yes.
Gatto and talked about him for a few minutes.
Some listener of Molyneux sent him Gatto, is my understanding.
Right.
Because I saw that in the comments on YouTube somewhere.
Zach, one day, I think we're on the phone, gives me two pieces of information. Number one, Peterson likes Gatto. Number two, here's Peterson's personal email address.
I had the pleasure in the fall, at the end of the summer, beginning of the fall, a good friend of mine and I had a phone call with Jordan Peterson, and mm-hmm. we were talking about the issues with higher education, the issues with schooling. This is a friend of mine that runs the venture capital fund I told you about, 1517 Fund. And he himself is like a philosophy grad school dropout. And we get on the issue of schooling, and we're talking a little bit about Gatto's work with Peterson. And, you know, he's familiar with Gatto, and he's a little... What he's read makes sense, but he's not sure just how much... citation-wise, the Gatto has.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tell Peterson a little bit about Johann Fichte, from whom Gatto read a lot about the Prussian influences on schooling, the specific desires to crush free will in individuals.
Yeah.
And Fichte, you know, was a follower of Kant and the whole genealogy there. So it was a cool conversation with Peterson.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, right there is the email window open with the draft message.
Hey, you should email him.
No, I mean, that's the message. I'm sending it today.
Great. I mean, he was very responsive. I was surprised.
Yeah.
So
I thank you for providing that information, and thank you for...
I found that because he got into a spat with a reporter on Twitter one day.
Yeah.
And he had screenshots of his emails with the reporter, and he forgot to black out his own email address.
It is kind of a funny moment in the talk you gave, the how to get ahead when you have nothing to offer. You start like telling the audience to give you names, and then you tell what their personal emails
are. Honestly, email addresses are not that hard.
No,
like, Peterson's is a bit unusual. It's smart how he has his. But most of them are usually, if it's a company that was at one point in the last 20 years a startup, the person's email address is almost always their first name at thatcompany.com.
Right.
If it's not, then it's their first initial, their first name, then their last name at thatcompany.com.
Right.
There are some weird variations, but usually you can figure out those variations with 30 minutes on Google.
Sure. So thank you. And I'm glad that you returned the favor. That was awesome.
Absolutely.
Andrew, thanks for joining us. Did you have any burning desires or questions before we wrap up?
No, I think I interrupted enough.
Great. I'm glad you were here.
I enjoyed this dynamic.
I like this. Yeah. This is fun. Very
thanks
lively.
For having me.
My pleasure. Thanks for having us in your house.
Yeah, thanks both of you.
Well, then that went well.
Yeah.
Zach, what's your website if people want to learn more?
Yeah, my website is Zach, Z-A-K, although I do own Zach, Z-A-C-H. ZakSlaybacK.com, ZakSlayback.com. I've thought about launching like a brand underneath of it, but my name is too good to not use my name.
Oh, it
literally rhymes.
Yeah.
People have asked me, "Is that your real name?" It's like, yes. I'm not going to just make up a random name. It's ZakSlayback.com. I've got an email list there where I use some email scripts you can use to get in touch with people like Jordan B. Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
And then for ambition mapping, I actually have a small workbook on that prepared. If you're an educator, I've got one specifically for educators that you can feel free to email me and ask about that one. But if you're not an educator, it's at zakslayback.com/ambition-mapping, M-A-P-P-I-N-G. So ambition mapping.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thanks for all the great work you're doing. Thanks for making me feel welcome in Pittsburgh.
Hey,
by the
like
way.
I said, the jewel of the Rust Belt.
Yeah.
The Paris of Appalachia.
Awesome.
You're more than welcome.
Well, I look forward to having you back on the show in the future.
Thanks, Brett.